This is the West Texas Dispatch. I'm George Slavak. Thanks for tuning in to our special election edition of the show. Today, we're talking to the candidates for Abilene's City Council Place 4 seat. It's open after the current councilman, Brian Yates, announced he would not seek re-election. First up, we have Navy veteran and business owner Ben Bailey. During his campaign, Bailey has focused on a philosophy of limited government intervention. Drawing from his military and HVAC background, Bailey advocates for reducing administrative hurdles to streamline local development and address Abilene's housing shortage. He specifically suggests fostering growth in the downtown area to better accommodate young professionals and military families. KACU's Josiah Wanhell spoke with Bailey for this series of conversations.
Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
What do you think is the best thing Abilene has going for it right now? And what do you think is Abilene's biggest challenge?
Biggest challenge is housing. I think that's it comes with a lot of different challenges, but the root of it is the housing. Man, there's not one. I'm gonna put a plug in for ACU. I'm using my GI Bill. I'm on hiatus right now. I'm not actively a student, but I got my first degree here in political science and history, and then I'm using my GI Bill. I've gone back and I think I'm currently listed as a student here, as an engineering student. And so, the engineering department here at ACU is phenomenal, and what they're doing with the Next Lab is, I think if no one's paying attention to it, you're behind. Like, you need to catch up. It's pretty incredible what they're doing. And you got worldwide implications of what ACU is doing. And then you've got DIAS, you got the new bomber coming in, you got the data centers. That's a question that we could go on and on for, because there is a lot of incredible stuff going on. I got to give a shout to our chamber, what Doug Peters does every day, and then our DCOA, what Misty Mayo does. I mean, they are, that goes back to what I was talking about, the professionals of letting the pros do what they need to do. And letting the universities do incredible things. So there's not one thing. There's a lot of exciting stuff going on in Abilene.
In terms of education, what plans do you have to support Abilene schools and ensure students have access to strong educational programs?
Honestly, I'll leave that to the school districts and, you know, be able to, with a lot of this, is the less government involvement, the better. We have professional teachers that's their jobs. And so I think letting them do their jobs is the best thing that we can do. So, again, regardless of whatever issue that comes about, man, I want to refer to the pros on it. And, what better than our teachers to tell us, hey, this is the direction that we need to go.
That seems like a consistency in your answers, right? Like, I'm going to be involved, but I'm going to leave it to the professionals on some of it. How have you seen that play out in your, personal career up to this point? How's that tied in?
Like I mentioned, I was prior military. I did 10 years in the Navy. And when I got back here, I bought an air conditioning and plumbing company. And I'll say I had zero experience in HVAC and plumbing during the military, but God provided an opportunity to buy this business, and so I took it. So, to answer your question, I learned quickly that I needed to rely on my guys that have been doing this for a long time, and same with the military. You have a what we called a SME, a subject matter expert. And no matter what their rank was or what their status was, they were the expert, and you go to them. So same thing with air conditioning or plumbing or economic development. There, anything you have, any industry, you're going to have those experts that they have devoted their life to studying or to building. And so I feel that it's the government's job and duty is to rely on them to let them do what it is that they do best. So if it comes to education, man, I want a teacher to get in there, because that they have dedicated their life to educating our children, and so I want to bring them into any conversation that that we may be tackling as a city council. But I always want to be, I want to look as a councilman more as a representative to those professionals and to the people, the citizens of Abilene. And I want to be able to have those open conversations, and because you don't know what you don't know. And I don't know a lot of things, but I know people that do know them. So I want to be able to build those relationships that I can find that expert in whatever issue that we're tackling and get down to the bottom of it. And as long as it helps the city and become stronger and safer, then I support that.
You just mentioned some of it about what your clientele would be, but kind of ideas about how you keep it accessible to the community.
So I think growth period, it needs to be managed. We're at a time where we're seeing, you know, unprecedented growth, whether it's with the data centers or with what's going on here at ACU. It's an exciting time. We have to look. I think when it comes to the housing or the economy, I think the biggest thing is we have to look at this as a in the term of decades and not years. So the housing crisis, going back to that, that's not going to be fixed overnight. There's some things that we can put some Band-Aids on, but it's not going to be fixed overnight. So as we approach this, we need to be thinking 10, 20, 30 years in advance. With that, that's going to go into addressing some of our infrastructure issues and as well as the economy. So it's like a lattice work of issues that if you can tackle one, you can tackle the other. You know, I think we just need to have some foresight to, as we're tackling one issue, we don't forget about another issue like water, or we don't forget about the economy or whatever, but they're all intertwined. You know, I don't look at them as problems. I just look at them as chances to continue to evolve and make our city better.
Moving on to economic development and just infrastructure as a whole, there's been some great work done in recent years. How would you attract new businesses and industries to Abilene to create those quality job opportunities for residents?
I think leaving it to the private sector as much as possible. I'm a big believer in having the government out as much as possible. City Council will for sure have play in it, but I think leaving it to the professionals, leaving it to developers, leaving it to entrepreneurs to bring that in. And I look at my job as a city councilman, if I were to have the honor to get on the city council, is to create an environment that is attractive for entrepreneurs and attractive for developers. With that, I was born and raised here, and I did 10 years in the Navy, and then I moved back, and I wanted my family raised here. So with that said, I think we need to continue to build a community where our youth, whether it's kids that grew up here, born and raised here, or college students from ACU, that they, when they graduate, they don't just move out. Because educating our children is an expense. It's an investment that we make, and we need to create an environment and an economy that the young professionals want to come back here, raise a family, and live here.
With that goal, is there any specific infrastructure things that need to change in terms of roads, public transportation, city infrastructure to meet the district's needs?
Yeah, I mean, infrastructure is going to be ongoing, and I think we continue to. I think there needs to be a systematic, decades long plan to continue to improve our infrastructure. I don't think that's something that's solved overnight, because once you finally get to the other side, you're going to have to start back over, because it's an ongoing issue that we're going to just need to constantly be tackling. As far as transportation, I know we've got our downtown's really building up, where we've improved parking, we've improved the walkability of downtown. I know like our public buses are great and working. So I think just a continued keeping that on the forefront of our policy, our yearly budget of making sure those things are addressed as issues come up. But that is it's something that just is going to be ongoing and constant that we have to tackle. It's not going to be a one year done fix. So,
and then the last thing, is there anything else about your platform or vision for Abilene that you would really like to share with voters as they head to the polls?
Every one of the candidates, no one's doing this because for personal reasons. I promise you that. No one's doing it for the pay. And we're all doing it because we care about this community. And it is a service.
For an extended version of this interview, links to the campaign and other candidate interviews we're airing this week, go to our website at kacu.org and click on local news. I'm Josiah Winnell.
Our next conversation is with Rich Lyles. Lyles brings a background in federal funding and infrastructure and says his professional experience navigating those systems is a key part of what he would bring to the council. KACU's Kason Higgins sat down with Lyles to discuss his campaign and the issues he says matter most to Abilene residents.
So to start off, what do you think is the single best thing that Abilene has going for it right now?
Oh, definitely quality of life. That's the whole reason why I moved here. I had an opportunity to come here about 6 years ago, and I'm coming from Southern Nevada. Abilene area is diametrically opposed to Southern Nevada in terms of its lifestyle. It's exactly what I was looking for.
And on the flip side, what do you see as the most pressing challenge that faces the city, the thing that needs the most attention?
Well, actually, attention to preserving that quality of life. It's there's a number of things that are happening here in Abilene that I've seen over the past year or two with trying to manage growth properly. That's something that we need to address, certainly the escalating housing costs. Infrastructure improvement, the roads here definitely are in serious need of repair. Those two main issues. Oh, and then a third one too, certainly not an afterthought and just as important, but access to good quality health to child care.
On that idea of affordable housing, it's become a real issue here in Abilene, like you mentioned. What ideas do you have for encouraging some more of it?
Well, we've got a really great opportunity here. And as you know, we have a number of people that have come into this particular market to do the construction for the large data center. And that's really kind of the focus of what's been driving our kind of runaway inflation on housing. But we do have a really great opportunity. And what it is it has to do with Dyess Air Force Base. As the B-21 mission is moved here, there are going to be, I've seen estimates anywhere between 5,000 and 6,000 new service members coming in. So what we need to do as a city council, we need to get with developers, we need to get with Global Strike Command out at Dyess Air Force Base, figure out exactly the number of folks coming in and their ranks, so how many E3s are coming in, so airmen, how many sergeants, E5s, et cetera, and officers. And we need to figure out what that housing profile looks like. So we can start building that now, and it will do two things. It'll make sure once those folks are in here that those permanent housing is in place for them. And at the same time, it'll start alleviating some of the pressure that we have in the market right now without being overbuilt.
Mayor Hurt has said the city is working to expedite housing development approvals. Do you support that approach? And are there any safety or other concerns that need to go alongside faster approvals?
Well, we need to always be cognizant and mindful of safety. You don't want to, for example, you don't want to build a ton of homes in a floodplain. So you really want to prioritize those, the places where it's more suitable for the housing. So prioritize that first. But I think one of the big things is just you're going to be looking at changing the zoning. So for example, over in the southeast side of Abilene, you still have a lot of acres that's probably zoned agricultural. We need to streamline the process so we can get that zoning done properly and make sure there aren't any corners that are cut. They're going to risk safety, you know, it'll be safety issues. But just make that process a lot more smooth, take out some of the red tape and make sure the housing gets built in an expeditious manner.
Beyond the data center conversation, are there other types of growth happening right now that you're watching closely, either with excitement or some caution?
Excitement or trepidation, that's a good question on that. There is, as far as the growth goes, well, one thing is actually specifically Dyess Air Force Base is going to be between 5,000 and 6,000 new people coming in as a result, or actually people working at that location as a result. There'll be more people. Some are going to come in with families. So you could have, maybe upwards to 20,000 new residents coming in for that. And I'm actually really excited about that because, number one, military families are great to have, and even the civilian families that work on base are great to have. But it's also something that we have enough time that we can plan for, and it will help us with one of the issues that we currently are facing right now with the housing. So I see great opportunity there, and I'm really excited and looking forward to Dyess having that new mission.
The city is currently in pay negotiation with Abilene firefighters. It's gotten heated at times. Where do you stand on those talks, and what outcome would you like to see?
Actually, I'm not intimately familiar with the details of those. I've seen it on the news. Well, first of all, let me qualify it with this. I want to make sure that our public servants are paid adequately and fully. But with our first responders, it makes me think really kind of personally within my family, even though I don't have anybody that's in firefighting. My father was a police officer earlier in his career. My mother was a retired Treasury agent, U.S. Treasury investigator. My sister's husband, my brother-in-law, is a police officer, a correctional officer specifically in Las Vegas Metro, and my son is a patrol officer in Las Vegas Metro. So I want to make sure that our first responders are adequately funded. And I would, in order to give you a better answer, I'd have to take a look at the budget and take a look and see exactly what the fiscal issue is on that and how it can be best mitigated.
A lot of Abilene residents have expressed frustration with Hendrick Health, concerns about a near monopoly on care and not enough physicians. Pregnant women in some cases have had to go out of town to find an OBGYN. What do you make of those concerns, and is there anything the city can do about them?
Well, the issue specifically with the OBGYN has to do with more state legislation than it does anything that the city council has done or has influence over. When you drive west and you go into New Mexico, the very first thing that I notice is all the gigantic billboards up there advertising OBGYN. So it's certainly been an exodus of that specialty from the state of Texas. And I think much to the detriment of particular to women, especially pregnant women here in the state. And here's the thing, I see that really more as a safety issue. I mean, it's something where if we have a policy in place where our doctors are leaving the state, we need to reexamine that policy and take a look and see what can be done to prevent that from happening. And once again, I don't see the city council having a role in that. It's more of a legislative issue, but it's something I would definitely like to see changed.
Roads and infrastructure have been a consistent complaint from Abilene residents, like you mentioned at the top. Your background involves navigating federal funding systems. How would you actually use that experience to bring more money to Abilene's infrastructure? And what does responsible long-term planning look like to you at the city level?
Okay, great questions. The first one, as far as how to get more money, and we need to leverage every single dollar that we can and have it matched by federal dollars. I was at a briefing where it looks like the city of Abilene is proposing approximately just under $8 million for that in the budget. Now, couple that with the fact that about 6 weeks ago, you had a Time magazine article that referenced an internal document within the city of Abilene that said the city needs about $110 million to fix the streets. Well, at $8 million a year, it's going to take pretty much forever to do that. Matter of fact, $8 million probably won't even catch up to it. So if you could match half of that, so say $4 million of that, you could match it on a 80-20 match. That's an additional $20 million plus the $4 million that you had that you didn't match. That's $24 million. And I know that we can do a whole heck of a lot more with $24 million a year than we can with $8 million a year.
As voters are trying to decide between you and your opponents, what's the clearest reason you'd give them to choose you for place number four?
I would say my experience with business development's number one, and also my focus on infrastructure. And my experience on being able to attract federal funds then, because here's the big thing that I want to do. I want to make sure that we can do all these road improvement projects because I want to be able to do it without raising taxes by one penny. If we can get that federal money in, because let's face it, we've all paid for it already. We've done it. We paid for it with our income taxes, and businesses have paid for it with their federal income tax payments as well. So that money's sitting out there. And I have nothing against the state of Montana or Idaho, but I'd much rather see that funding come to us than necessarily go in disproportionately to a place like Idaho or Montana. We've paid for it. The money's out there. I want to make sure that it comes back to us in a way that's commensurate with our needs. So I have the experience to do that. The other thing is working with the Governor's Office of Economic Development. If you want more information, they can go out to the website, which is richlyles4, that's the number 4, Abilene, all one word. So richlyles4abilene.com, and they can take a look. It's a little bit more of the experience I have that I bring to the table.
The early voting period begins on the 20th and continues through the 28th. Election day is May 2nd. For an extended version of this interview, links to the campaign, and other candidate interviews we're airing this week, go to our website, kacu.org, and click on local news. I'm Kason Higgins.
Coming up after the break, we'll hear from our final two candidates in this race, Allison Carroll and Tammy Fogle. This is the West Texas Dispatch. Today on the show, we're bringing you conversations with the four candidates vying for the Place 4 City Council seat this election. Brian Yates, the current Place 4 councilman, is not running for re-election, and we've scheduled these interviews in order that those candidates appear on the ballot. Next up, we have Allison Carroll. Carroll moved to Abilene in 2001. She received her psychology degree from Abilene Christian University. In 2015, she bought Monk's Coffee Shop, and she ran that until last year when she sold the store. During her time in Abilene, Carroll has served on the Abilene Convention and Visitors Bureau, the Abilene Chamber of Commerce, and the Comprehensive Plan Advisory Committee. And we want to note that she also currently serves on KACU's Community Advisory Board. KACU's Leslie Kerrigan spoke to Allison Carroll about her campaign.
So what do you think is the best thing about Abilene?
I have always thought and probably will always think that the best thing about Abilene is its people. We just have incredible people in our community who are willing to lend a hand, come together, a very welcoming community, and we just have incredible people everywhere you look.
What do you see as being the biggest opportunity for growth?
We need to be sure that we've got our foundations in place to sustain the growth that we are experiencing so that our growth does not outpace our ability to support it. And I think, too, though, that another area that we can do some good work on is in the realm of communication and engagement. I think that there are a lot of big things happening and just regular everyday residents don't always feel very informed about what is happening, the decisions that are made, or why decisions are made the way that they are. And I think that we can do a lot of work around helping keep citizens informed and making it easier for them to find the information that they're looking for.
So Abilene is currently experiencing a housing crisis with rent prices rising significantly. Mm-hmm. How should residents of Abilene handle these changes?
You know, we're seeing the prices of housing rentals impact members of the community up and down the chain. I would want residents of Abilene to know that there are many efforts already underway to help address it. I have seen coordination and cooperation from basically all corners of Abilene trying to work on this issue. And it's a really tricky one because what we're facing is just an issue of supply and demand. And the unfortunate reality is until the supply increases, we're going to be in a tough spot. But I think as soon as the RV parks are fully occupied, that is going to help. There are thousands of units that are in process currently of being built. Once those come online, we should be seeing some relief.
Also looking at city planning, what do you think should be done to encourage responsible planning for Abilene's health and water needs?
Two very important components to a thriving community. I think in regards to health, a lot can be done on the side of engagement, making sure that residents have access to the resources that they need. If our community does not have health, it's hard to get anything else done. And in regards to water and future planning, that is top of mind for many, if not all, residents. Water is always king, and so we need to be pursuing projects that will help us secure water into the future. So the Cedar Ridge Reservoir Project, I think that is incredibly important for us to continue to pursue that.
There have been many complaints that Hendrick has a monopoly on healthcare in Abilene, which has contributed to a lack of accessibility to OBGYNs. Is this something you're concerned about, and is there anything you would like to do about it?
I think that we can look at ways that we might be able to help incentivize or encourage people to enter into those healthcare fields. I think there is room for conversation looking at what we can do on a city level to help address some of the concerns or some of the impediments for people setting up their own practices. It's going to take cooperation to find out where the needs are, what are the obstacles, and then to work together to find creative solutions to address those issues.
We talked about how there is quite a bit of growth happening in Abilene in a variety of different sectors. Would you like to put any limits or guardrails in place on any of the work being done?
I think we always want to be careful when talking about enacting material limitations on development, guardrails we can achieve through ordinance, through planning and zoning, through incentivizing. And I think those are the tools that we would be best served by leaning on. I don't know if you've heard people talk about the Abilene donut. As growth spreads outward, a community's ability to service those developments and the strain that it puts on the infrastructure to service those developments creates an imbalance to where center is perhaps being underutilized. So I think looking at tools like incentivizing infill development, offering incentives to create momentum there, I think helps with that outward sprawl issue.
Recently, the City Council voted to deny the extension of the meet and confer contract with the Abilene Professional Firefighters Association. What solution do you think the city should pursue?
Yeah, that is a very complex situation, and it's a situation that has far-reaching implications for the whole city. It seems to me that council and the city manager, everybody is very invested in making sure that we continue to take care of our firefighters. So as I understand the situation, the original average plus 4% contract was put into place to address a specific issue. Firefighters had been underpaid for a very long time, and we were losing our firefighters to other communities. In an effort to address that, that is when this original contract was put into place. So the intent was to very quickly catch up the pay of firefighters and to make it competitive. I think that it has, over the last 6 years, achieved that goal because our pay currently is very competitive. In the context of this most recent contract, where things have gotten tricky is that although this the average plus 4% did a great job of making firefighter pay competitive, we are now in a situation budget-wise where we have other city departments whose pay is now not competitive, and we are starting to lose other city employees due to an issue in pay. Even though the current contract was not renewed for another 4 years, like it just got extended until the end of the fiscal year, what needs to happen at this point is for the city and firefighters to get together and to have some open communication. There are ways that we can maintain competitive pay for our firefighters while also meeting the needs of other city departments. The more that we can do to help create understanding of each other's perspectives, I think will help move that ball down the field.
Is there anything that I didn't ask about that you would like people to know?
I would want listeners to know that I am running for council because I love Abilene and I want to be of service. This is where my family is. This is where my nieces and nephews are growing up. And I want them and all residents to have the highest quality of life possible and to have the same chance for success that I did. Abilene is at a real inflection point. We are in the midst of incredible opportunity and some very real challenges. And we need thoughtful leadership, community-engaged problem-solving, and sound principles to guide the next stages of our growth. And I think my time as a small business owner has uniquely equipped me to serve in this role. So during my time as president of the Downtown Association, I was able to work closely with council and city departments to get several projects done, like pedestrian trash cans and Menor Park renovation, which allowed me to peek behind the curtain and see how do we address problems with ordinances. Serving on the city's comprehensive plan advisory committee allowed me to take a broader view and to see how long-term planning is achieved. And perhaps more importantly, because of the unique nature of the business that I ran, I had the opportunity to develop a wide range of relationships across the spectrum of the population of Abilene. And through those relationships, got to see how council decisions impacted the daily lives of residents. I think those are important perspectives to bring to the table. I would ask that the listeners do vote for me, Allison Carroll, for Abilene City Council Place 4. But even if you don't vote for me, it is incredibly important that you vote. The decisions that are made on a local level have the biggest impact on our quality of life. Please go out, make your voice heard, and be sure that you vote on May 2nd.
You can hear more of my conversation with Allison Carroll for Place 4 on the City Council and find links to her website and social media at our website, kacu.org. I'm Leslie Kerrigan.
Finally today, we hear from Tammy Fogel. She ran for the Place 6 seat last year, but lost to Travis Craver by about 1,500 votes. Fogel is an active participant in school boards and city council meetings. She is a Hardin-Simmons graduate and has been living in Abilene for 33 years. KACU's Bailey Simon spoke with her for this series.
So my first question for you is, what is your main motivation behind running for city council?
About 6 years ago, I realized I wasn't very involved in what happens at the local level because I thought really the national politics, voting for president was important. And so as I started to learn the importance of that, I decided to become an active citizen. And so I found that most people want to be involved, they just don't know how. And so if I can bridge the gap, I think we can have a better community overall by me being on council.
So the AI Data Center has brought an influx of workers to the Abilene area, and with them is coming a lot of challenges. Starting with the housing crisis, do you have any ideas that could be implemented to provide more affordable housing?
The problem with housing is that it's a private sector entity, and so there's not a lot that local government can do to help with getting more housing, but they can make the process a lot easier. And so I think by making sure that we're streamlining the permit process so that builders can have access to the land faster and getting their product built to the consumer faster is the best role that government can play, especially here locally. I don't have any concerns with some of the streamlining because government moves fairly slowly, and eliminating some of the red tape that has caused it to slow down rather than the safety concerns. I don't see the safety concerns being the issue. I just think it's being more intentional with making sure the process works more effectively and gets allows builders to get the product out to the consumer faster.
How have you seen the cost of living change this year, and how have you seen people be affected by that?
Well, the traffic has been the biggest indicator that we are not what we used to be. There's the traffic at the grocery store, people in different retail shops, just being able to access things has changed. I think it's causing a burden on the local citizens right now as we're growing. And I think it'll continue to be a little bit uncomfortable until we start to get this a plan in place to make sure things are working more effectively. And I hope that's one of the things I'd like to bring to council, is to get some planning going so that we are not trying to play catch up all the time.
How do you think that planning would help Abilenians adapt to and make changes, dealing with hard financial times like this?
So the hard financial times means that we don't need to be raising tax rates. And one of the things that we've been consistently doing for the last several years is increasing the tax rate, meaning that citizens pay more while the local municipality still collects more revenue. And so the burden has been put on the citizens to pay for these growing pains, whereas I think this is a time where we want to lower the tax rate so that citizens can have some relief from the financial burden that they're experiencing through the housing influx and all those different things. And I think planning also allows us not to have to take out more debt or use bonds, which also increases the tax rate.
The Stargate Center will take up energy and water resources in Abilene as well. What would you like the city to do to encourage responsible planning for Abilene's water and energy needs?
Well, I think one of the concerns that has been brought up by multiple citizens before this ever fully was put into place was that it always uses more than we expect. And having been one of the first major, if not the largest, AI data center in the nation, we are kind of the guinea pigs. And unfortunately, we're not in a location that we have a lot of excess resources like water for specifically. And so I think it's concerning to me that we're at this place and we don't necessarily have a plan. And so I do know that the second phase of the Lancium project was mentioned in January that they were going to have their own natural gas plant. And I think that takes care of that if it continues to move forward. But the water part is going to be an issue, and local residents are going to have some of the negative consequences, especially around there with the groundwater and things like that. And so I think moving forward, we need to make sure that there's not just, hey, this is what we're going to be using and plan on that, but also giving a buffer to make sure that if that should increase, that we have a plan in place that will make sure that the residents aren't going without water.
What influence can the city have when they're dealing with like these big, powerful companies? How do they kind of prioritize their citizens' needs while, still going against like a really powerful force like Stargate?
You know, that's where elections really matter, because if we get some people who really understand the value of putting all citizens at the front of the line, right now it seems we have like this idea that stakeholders matter, and stakeholders are where you pick who gets to have a say, and it doesn't necessarily include all citizens. So I think having elections where people actually are elected and understand that all citizens need to be considered, not just certain stakeholders, is really key here, and that's why these city elections matter.
So the cost of healthcare is rising, and there are a lot of complaints that Hendrick holds a near monopoly. From your conversations with Abilene residents, what stance have you seen most people take on this issue?
I think it's concerning to me as an individual, knowing that we need more influence of other medical entities in the city to make sure that we're all getting cared for. And this is something that we have to make sure we're electing people who are aware of the situation, and making sure we're partnering with people who are helping to mitigate this problem. And Hendrick has been a longstanding part of the community, and so they've done a lot of good, and they're trying to do what they do best. But one of the things we have to be careful for is that we cannot create a situation where the other competition can't thrive. And so I'm not really sure how much the city has to play in that role, because it is a private industry, but it is something definitely we need to keep in mind, that when opportunities come up to allow more competition, and I think we should take advantage of it for sure.
Can you talk a little bit about why you are pro extending the firefighter contract?
Well, one of the things we've learned is that the firefighters are very, very integral into keeping home insurance prices low. There's a lot of benefits to having a stable firefighter group in the city. And so one of the things I've seen is they've worked really hard for the last 6 years to stabilize this competitive pay. And they had a really good, healthy model of how to do it, or a plan on how to do it. And now that they're getting somewhat stabilized, the city seems to be saying, wait, let's pull back now and focus on another area. And I think that's key to what's been happening in the past, is that we focus on one area versus the other. And we need to see how we can continue keeping that momentum going in both of the areas, or in multiple areas, so that we don't lose it. But if we don't keep that going, that momentum going, then I think we're going to have a lot longer term negative costs that we can't really foresee right now. In fact, right after the council decided not to continue or to agree to the agreement, I've heard of firefighters looking elsewhere to go find jobs.
The last question that I have for you is, what do you think makes you stand out against the other three candidates?
I think most people should and are qualified to run for city council. I think that was the intended goal, that we had everyday people running for office. And now I have a full slate of people running against me. And actually, I'm excited for the competition, because like I mentioned, competition produces a better product. The problem is, this particular round, I am actually probably no more than most of the people who are running about the ins and outs of the city, because I have been paying attention for the last 3 or 4 years, and I've been doing the research and trying to look at what problems need to be addressed. The other issue that makes me stand out is, one of the things I've been asking for the last several years, ever since I started being involved in city affairs, is more transparency. Let's have better communication. When you shed light on stuff, it actually brings good things to come. It's a good thing. Light is a good thing to disinfect it. And so being more transparent is important. And when I was recently at a forum last week, all the other candidates said the same thing. We want more transparency. Well, that's what I've been fighting for before they even probably thought about running for council. The other issue that really makes me stand out is that I am actually one of the few people that wants to make improvements and changes to what's happening in our city. And the others are very content with the direction the city is going. And so from what I've heard with citizens, is they need some things to be fixed. Transparency, we need to know where our revenue is going. And the fact that I have done the research and I know where some of the problem areas are already without having to wait to get on council, I think I'm going to be able to use my time way more effectively to get a lot more accomplished as a council member once I'm elected than some of the other candidates. And they're all nice people. It's been fun to get to know them, but I do know that I am a different caliber and am ready to make sure that we include citizens more than we ever have. And that's something that I do feel helps me to stand out, along with the transparency.
Tammy, thank you so much for coming in to talk with us today.
Thank you. I appreciate being here. It's always a pleasure to be here.
You can hear more about our conversation and find links to Fogel's website and social media on our website, kecu.org, and on our mobile app. While you're there, you can find the other interviews in our series of candidate conversations. I'm Bailey Simon. This is KECU.
Early voting begins Monday, and Election Day is May 2nd. You can find more information, including voting schedules and extended versions of these candidates' interviews, on our website. KACU.org. Before we go today, we're going to take time for West Texas Roots. As Roots is a part of the name for this segment, we get a lot of stories about people's childhood experiences and get to see them relive their memories. Dennis Smith recalled one such story of when his parents and siblings moved into the Christian Youth Center in Abilene. That was after his father got a job maintaining the property. Sadly, the center is now closed, but the memories that Dennis and many others have remain.
I was in the fifth grade, so that would have been back in about 1970. My parents, two brothers, and a quote-unquote sisters. We were foster parents, and we got this little girl when she was newborn with open spine. They predicted she would not live past 5 months. And I believe she turned 57 this year. For a year, we lived at the CYC, the Christian Youth Center, located off of Loop 322. I don't know how we got tied into it, because we were members of the Russell Avenue Church of Christ. And I think Highland, I think, wound up buying Russell out, but they hired my dad to come out there and live, and we would cut the grounds and everything. We had a gym for basketball, shooting pool. We had a lake down off of the hill for fishing. Charged 50 cents for you to come out and fish, swim, play in the gym, whatever. But it was a great time, picnic areas and everything. There was an Olympic-sized swimming pool with a fence running down the middle of it, because men could swim on one side, women would swim on the other. We did have problems with the boys poking little holes in the wooden fence to peek through. We would just go in and patch the fence on a monthly basis. We had all kinds of animals escape from the zoo and come over. Peacocks and a large tortoise that escaped and made it there. So as a young boy, we had the fields to hunt in and do whatever. I mean, it was paradise for us. Highland finally closed it down. It was early 70s, I believe. We were there for about a year. Okay. Year and a half. I believe Sassy the Clown purchased it, and now I believe it's just privately owned. They've enlarged the lake. The gym, I think, is now a mechanic shop. But and they covered up the swimming pool. Part of Abilene's history out there that most people don't even remember.
We recorded Dennis Smith's story at the Taylor County Expo Center. This has been the West Texas Dispatch. Thanks for tuning in to this special election episode. We hope you feel more informed when you head to the polls. We're here each Wednesday at noon. Plan to join us. Tell a friend. And if your friend isn't able to tune in Wednesdays at noon, let them know they can always subscribe to the podcast. West Texas Dispatch is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can find it on that KACU mobile app, too. We had help this week from our executive producer, Heather Claiborne, who had help from our team of producers, Shayla Conley and Caleb Leger, as well as our digital editor, Calvin Claiborne. Special thanks to J.C. Gamble, who wrote our theme. I'm George Levesque.